I would just like to apologize for the chairperson. She's not available today. And in the absence of that, we will nominate an acting chairperson to chair this meeting. Can I call in for nomination for the chairperson?
Yes, chairperson, it's yours. Yes, I'm nominating for honorable Paul to chair the meeting.
Can I get any second of that? Honorable Mukhoro, could you please come and take your seat?
Good afternoon, honorable members. As duly elected as an acting chairperson for this meeting, I have accepted the challenge. Thank you all. I must say you are all welcome here. The chairperson of the committee is not in. She is held up by some of her responsibilities somewhere, which is also part of the whole way of running this country. And I am going to act on her behalf. As I said, you are all welcome. We will elaborate on few items of the agenda. And surely we will be guided by what comes out of here. Thank you very much. First of all, apologies. Oh, is there a hand somewhere? Hello, ma'am.
Good day, Chair. My name is Vivian Cardleser. I'm just wanting to attend an apology on behalf of the Director General, Mr. Duncan Hindle, who is attending the UNESCO conference and he will be returning at the end of this week, as well as the Acting Director General, Ms. Penny Vingefold, who has another commitment. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. There is an apology from the DG as well as the acting DG. I will hear from the committee how it feels about the absence of the head of the department. I would just like to have response from the members, how do you people feel about the absence of the head of department, whereas according to the agenda here, we are going to have a presentation from the department. Yes.
I think, Chair, perhaps it would be clarified who is here. We hope he didn't send somebody from the kitchen to present you this behalf. Excuse me, Chair. So the point I'm making, Chair, is that hopefully it's the management of the department from Chief Directorate and perhaps supported by Director. I think that's the point we try to make. Though, Chair, I would raise it as a concern. I hope that he would at some point make himself available, because there are outstanding matters that I think, for instance, this matter that we are discussing today is a serious matter. It requires resources. It's been there, Chair, if you remember the white paper 6 on inclusive education. It's an outstanding matter, but it's part of the presentation. I'm just saying that it would have been nice to have him here. So I'm raising it just as a concern and say hopefully he sent also a powerful delegation. We will accept the delegation, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Member Zimande. So you feel that we can continue in this absence. You suggest that we can continue this absence. Thank you, Ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm not feel comfortable, Chairperson. I expect I'm going to get the explanation from the department, because I'm worried who's going to take the responsibility. If we want something, who's going to take that? Maybe they're going to clarify what happened with the ditch. At least the leader of the delegation, at least. I'm not feel comfortable, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I'm sure department is listening. That the Honourable Member Mam Kukana doesn't feel comfortable, especially when you're going to do an important presentation and the head of the department is not here. Maybe we can, for the moment, listen to the department to explain. Yes.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I do want to assure members present of how seriously the department views this particular session with the Select Committee. We received the notice of this meeting on the 14th of October, when the Director General was already in Paris attending the biennial conference of UNESCO, where he has also been duly elected as the head of the Education Commission internationally, which compelled him to remain there for this particular week as well to chair a session. I am the Deputy Director General in the Office of the DG, and I've been deployed here by the Acting Director General, Ms. Kennedy Interfold, to lead this particular session today with the specialist support of the Chief Director of Strategic Coordination and Planning in the department, and supported by the Director for Inclusive Education, Dr. Moses Imanani. I omitted to mention the name of my colleague, Dr. Wilson Makalachenche, and I trust that we will be able to respond adequately, one, to the urgent request for this meeting, and two, for the detail required in the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Deputy Director. I would like to get some more input, not unless the Honourable Member Mamkigan is satisfied. Thank you, ma'am.
I should think I must raise this and emphasize that we are seated here, and we as politicians will be talking to them. And who are we talking to if we do not have a political body from that side? But I don't say we must not continue. But this must not be a tendency, because we cannot sit here as politicians discussing issues with them without a political head. That is very much unfair. We do not want to be pulled down. We want to stay where we are. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Can I feel?
Thank you, Chair. I'm comfortable with them. I think the explanation is fine. I think they suffice to help us with what we want. But is it not the norm for the department to at least have something written? When the DG is not there, we get a letter that the DG is not coming, the apology, written apology, with the appointment of someone who is going to stand on his behalf. Now that is the DG. PDG, I'm not so bad. I think it is the norm that at least we have something written down. Because if we've got something written down, legally that person is violated by the department because it's they are not, so maybe they've bought it with them and maybe they are going to submit it. But if it's not there in future, I think it will be very important that we get something written down. And I would propose if that is the case or not the case, then we can go with them. I think I'm comfortable with them.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I think that balances the situation, Mam Kekan. I think we can take it at that level. We continue, but with the emphasis of members' feeling that this is not our way of operation. Usually in committees, when the head of the department is not here, and especially when presentation is made, we have to attach responsibility to the head of the department. In the absence of head of the department, it's something that really we don't accept. But however, I think the general feeling is that we continue with the emphasis that the DG should have written a letter, and actually in that letter, even appointing someone who's going to deputize him and who's going to carry the responsibility of what is going to be discussed here. So I think we take it at that level, Honorable Member, we continue. And then the next item will be presentation by the Department of Education on access to education for children with special needs. That's the theme of the presentation. Thank you. Over to the
Chairperson. I'm just concerned also about the documents. We received the documents today. We didn't receive the documents earlier, just to interrogate with the documents. We received the documents today. So I'm also concerned about that. So how are we going to ask questions from them? We received the documents. We didn't interrogate the documents. We just received the documents today. I'm just concerned also about this.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Yeah, those are some of the things that really make committees very uncomfortable to come and sit with department without a head. Who's going to answer now the question of the document being presented to the committee members this morning? How are they expected to make input on the basis of what the document says without having gone through it? And not only going through it, the committee must sometimes, you know, put come together and look, you know, in a group, look at the document, and probably take a position. This Honorable Gunda.
Chair, I'm sorry that I attend this committee now. My apologies, but Chair, the question that Honorable Member is asking is a very, very valid question. It's a problem when you need to interrogate a department and you are not properly prepared, which means you are not taking service delivery seriously. That's the main thing. And it looks like department doesn't understand, or they, I don't know how I can say, because it's not fair towards the committee members. Give them this morning the document. While they're presenting, you must read with them through the document, because we had other committees as well. And when you go through these things with them, you can't ask proper questions and satisfy yourself that we are doing justice to this. So all I say, and there are serious questions that are going to come raised from this presentation. Serious questions. There will be questions that you will say to us, we can't answer that, we will go back and we will write a written reply. And then they will come back again.
So we must just check that, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Can you just give us your opinion, Honorable Gunda, as to do you say no, we shouldn't proceed, or we proceed with this emphasis, as we have said?
Chair, if I must be honest with you, I want to say it again. It's not fair, and it's going to be injustice to our work of oversight and asking questions concerning service delivery. But as it is, we might continue and we'll pick up problems. For if it's my opinion, I would have said we would have postponed this meeting. To have the DG here or the HOD here or a political head that can give direct answers to us.
Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. Chairperson, I want us to here today we are dealing with symptoms and not with the actual problem. Because this is not for the first time that we found ourselves in this situation. Because it's unfair for the department and from this committee, management committee. Because we're having administrative support in this committee, we're supposed to liaise with the department, APRA. That will empower us to give us the information in advance. So just in saying, yeah, we're trying to really attack the department because I'm not sympathetic to that. But we must not deal with it in a haphazard way. In dealing with the problem, because I find it very difficult to deal with the symptoms and not dealing with the problem. Because the problem is in another committee which I'm serving. I'm going to mention it because the chairperson is here of the committee. We send them back because you can't have a process that's for compliance, and we are not going to be able to engage. And also, the level of undermining this institution which is called Parliament, because it must make my work easy. My oversight to that and engage the department. But I'm saying that the fundamental problem, the underlying problem here, is the way our system is functioning in Parliament. Because I want to emphasize, we're having administrative support in the committee. We're having a management team in the committee. So the interaction must be prior before coming to this platform. And for the department as well, there is no way that there is no political head leading the team. Even it's worse when you're having not your head of administration leading his administration. We understand the role of being preoccupied with other responsibilities, but I mean Parliament should be respected for that matter. The Parliament was supposed to ask even for a postponement because of the fact that the teams who are leading us, that includes the minister, he can't attend this session. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Member De Beer. It seems the input has diverted the whole thing. Member seems really not to be satisfied. And they seem to want to demonstrate their dissatisfaction. I'm just going to give one round of discussion. And everybody going to speak must come out clearly whether we postpone the meeting or we continue the meeting. That is what is required here. I cannot decide alone. Thank you. Honorable Member Bloom.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think that the delegation is bleeding where they are sitting. I will propose that let us continue with the meeting. Let's have the briefing. I'm sure that they will explain to the DG next time it won't be accepted that this type of things. But you see, why I'm also taking that line? It's taxpayers' money that we are busy with here. They must go back. It's planes. It's accommodation and everything. It's not acceptable, but I am saying let us continue with the meeting. Let's get the briefing
from them, Chairperson.
Can I just ask you a question, Honorable Member Bloom? All right, I get your point, but at the end of the whole thing, to who do we attach the responsibility? What do you think?
Yes. No, you see, Chairperson, the Deputy Director General is present here. He's the second senior position person in the department. And I can say that the Deputy Director General will take responsibility and ask and answer the questions, because the Director General is not here, but the DG, Deputy DG, is the second most senior person in the department. So I'm very much sure that the team here will be able to answer questions that we are fielding. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
I'm pleading to the House that we continue as long as it won't happen again. As a pan, that's a showman.
Two people say you continue. I'm just going to give one hand. Just one hand.
Chairperson, no. We must continue with the meeting, but I propose that when we are going to ask the question, but the department must give us the 10 replies to our questions.
Thank you. I think I must close this debate. Other question? You want to clarify something?
Yeah. If the honourable member clarifies what I do, if she's suggesting written answers, that we will not have deliberations, or after deliberations, we will still need the written question. I mean, written answers or something. That can be clarified quite clear. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Member Nzimande, can you just clarify?
Yes, Chairperson. No, I'm just proposing. I want to ask the department the questions, and then at least if they can supply, whether we have the deliberations, but they can also supply us those questions in written submissions.
I think Honourable Member Nzimande understand the motive behind this thing. Mm-hmm. They can ask a question and answer, but they must also go back and give us written questions. Because, you know, if it's a written question, then you have something in future to refer to. I think we leave it like that, members. Sorry, just
one of
just switch off your
mantle.
I think we leave it like that, Honorable Member Bloom. Let's say that we agree as a committee that we are going to allow department to continue with their presentation, but with the proviso that the committee does not expect a similar situation in future. The committee expects a head of department to be leading the delegation. We don't mind. He can sit there and delegate some members of his delegation to speak, but finally the responsibility is not going to be attached to those who spoke. They are going to be attached to the Director General. That is why many committees here have been returned. Even this morning, one committee has been returned because of the same problem. It seems, as we look at this whole thing, that there is a general laxity in the department. Departments just operate as business, you know, usual. This is now business unusual. This is what we must understand. We are in a period where we really want to activate everybody, every South African, to understand that
what is needed in this country. We need delivery. And we cannot have delivery if some people who are ahead of what is expected to be delivered do not appear before a committee to account and to take responsibility. I think with those few comments, we will leave it there, and then I give over to department to give the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think there are two things I'd like to say to preface our presentation, and one is to assure the committee that the senior management team of this department is working incredibly hard to meet all of the commitments that we are presented with. We took it very seriously when we received the notice last Thursday, the first notice of this meeting, to inform the Secretariat that the DG was not in the country. It was checked with the Chairperson, and the Chairperson agreed that the Acting Director General should lead this delegation today. I was informed as the Deputy Director General in the office of the DG this morning that I would need to stand in for the Acting DG because of an urgent matter that arose. I don't know the nature of the matter, so I can't defend her or present a plausible argument to convince the committee what was so urgent. But I can say that I had to spring to action and be here today to represent the department and not to waste taxpayers' money. I can assure you that my task in the Office of the Director General is to ensure that we have proper workflow and that we respond to all of the notices. But I want to urge and I want to plead with the committee secretariat that the short notice of a meeting of this nature, we take it very seriously, and we need to allow ourselves adequate time to present as comprehensively as possible all of the information and documentation at our disposal to inform the committee for a very informed discussion and a critical one, because we expect to account to our politicians publicly. So I can assure you that whatever it is that we are not able to do here today, it is my responsibility to ensure that it meets all of the requirements and expectations of this committee, and I give my word that that's what I will undertake to do. I'm also supported by two very able colleagues who I'm sure we can count on, who the person on my left, Dr. Mahala Chete, represents us as the project manager of our program of action, and we have never fallen short of any of the details of providing information to any of the committees that we present to. So I will only strive to keep up our good record to do so. So, Chairperson, with that as my defense, because we don't just like to bleed without the defense, but I take seriously every comment that has been made, and it will be conveyed in the spirit in which it was intended. I'd like to now formally start and to introduce the topic under discussion, the Deputy Director General, which I failed to note at the outset under apologies, and I apologize for my own oversight.
I'm sorry. Dr. Salesa
Chubeka is also not able to be here.
I'm sorry, Vivian DG. I've got the Honorable Member Bloom here. He had his hand up,
yeah,
and I wanted to cut him to allow him to go
sorry,
on. But he's looking at me with a very serious eye. I don't know whether really I'm committing crime, but in any case, Honorable Member Bloom, you're not changing.
Yes, it's only a point of clarification. I have said that the Deputy Director General is in the meeting. That was my understanding. But according to the presenter now, even the Deputy Director General is not here. Is that the position?
Can I clarify?
Yes.
We are a team of seven DDGs. I am the DDG in the Office of the Director General. So I deputize in many instances for the Director General. The Acting Director General, though, appointed by Minister in his absence, is not here, Ms. Penny Vingefold. The branch responsible for the matters of inclusive education and special needs is headed by Mrs. Palesa Chebeka, who's also overseas at the moment. And I was left with the delegation, delegated by her, to be here today.
Yeah, thank you, Acting DDG. I think Zimandis,
Can we have one meeting, please? Yeah, I think on the other hand, honourable members, we must take it that this is fairly a new department. It is just, I think, in the process of being established, and maybe they may not be familiar with interacting with committees of this nature. I will say, finally now, I'm going to allow the presenter to continue and no more interruption. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to be handing over formally to the presenter, Dr. Simelane, to lead the discussion. Just in by way of information, the work of this particular, this is our first presentation to this select committee, so we want to do justice to expectations. But I also want to say that Dr. Simelane made it clear to me that this is his first ever presentation to a committee, so I trust that you will be gentle with him. But I'm saying that facetiously because we are confident that as an expert in his field, he will be able to address the matters under discussion. Honourable members, the topic for us today is a very serious one because the issue of access for all learners to education is indeed a very critical one that we take seriously as the Department of Education. Whilst the Department of Basic Education is in its infancy, the Department of Education, in terms of its own program and program of action particularly, has the responsibility to lead this country's strategy for human resource development for South Africa. And it carries with that responsibility not only the work of ensuring that all learners have access to an equitable and fair exposure to education and all of the principles that underpin it. The inclusion of all learners is taken as seriously in that mission. So the question of access cannot be separated, in our view, from the issue of inclusion and inclusiveness. We all know that the debate that raged for many years around the matters of mainstreaming or special needs has led to a lot of debate and discussion on the ground. And the practitioners out in the field are constantly reminding the department of the challenges that they are facing in the issues of mainstreaming. At the same time, the issues of resourcing is a critical one. So when we develop our program of action and when we look at the medium-term strategic framework and all of the operational plans of the department, we have to bear in mind the critical needs of, and special needs of a segment of our learners and teachers out there. The institutions historically that have been allocated this responsibility have largely been confined to a particular section of the community for all of the historical reasons I don't need to elaborate on. But there in recent times have been many, many strong and very clearly focused moves, especially informed by White Paper 6, to ensure that our learners have an equitable access to the share of the country's resources. We need to, however, ensure as officials that the resources of the state are fairly and properly assigned to those areas and sites of learning. But I think it's important for us, certainly from the senior management level, to ensure that we also take on board all of those aspects that inform both our national, our domestic practice, but also our role as part of an international community, which is why there will be an expansion on the issue around the convention that informs our practice as an education department. Through our cluster activities also, we look as far as possible to make sure that the work that we do is integrated with the work of other departments. So where we talk resources and infrastructural support, the fast tracking that is required to ensure that the department in all of its provincial formations as well as at the national level is able to adequately provide the guidelines and the policy directives to inform both the issue of resource delivery but also the oversight function of managing those resources adequately. It's for those reasons that I think the issues of the content that informs the work of our directors for inclusive education has to bear in mind all of those aspects, not only curriculum content,
but also the sites of learning and where learners and teachers find themselves on a daily basis to ensure that we address the shortfalls there. We are, however, as every other government department, mindful of the fact that we are working with extreme financial constraints, but that it should never become the excuse for not meeting our commitments and our own expectations of delivery in this regard. So we ensure that through our program of action reporting back, we adequately address those needs as well. And so we look forward to further engagement to be able to deliver and to present to you progress in this regard. So without going on much further, Chairperson, I want to hand over to Dr. Simelane to do the formal presentation and then for us to take the guided questions, both for further discussion here now, but also for follow-up with written reply, where it is that we need to do so, and as directed by you as Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. I just want to say this to Dr. Simelane, that understand you say it is the first time you appear in front of a committee, but I just want to make you feel comfortable, feel free. We are not brutal, we are just like you, but what we want is just the right thing. That's all what we need. And I hand over to you, Doctor. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. Good afternoon, and thanks for the opportunity that we could present what we do for children with special education needs in particular. I'm just going to go through a few slides, a few themes and approaches. Firstly, we are going to highlight obligations of member states and of, in particular, of the Department of Education as articulated from the UN Convention on Persons with Disabilities. And then I'm then going to move over to looking at issues or approaches of ensuring access to education through an inclusive system at all levels. We'll look at screening, identification, assessment, and support, environmental access, availability of assistive devices, availability of appropriate learning and teaching support material, teacher training, availability of specialist professional staff, guidelines for inclusive learning programs, curriculum for the South African Sign Language, advocacy, and finally, on the strengthening of special schools. Just a few issues which we regard as obligations. To highlight them, one would start off with the fact that it is clearly articulated that there should be equal access to education opportunities, irrespective of the severity of the disabilities. Access to an inclusive, quality and free primary education and secondary education on equal basis with others in the communities in which they live. Reasonable accommodation of the individual's requirements be provided. Specific needs of all learners experiencing barriers to learning are met. Development of minimum norms and standards for the education of learners experiencing barriers to learning. Capacity building for all stakeholders, that will include parents and caregivers, teachers, learners, and education planners, towards meeting the needs of learners experiencing barriers to learning. Ensuring early identification, intervention, and development of all children with disabilities within an integrated early childhood development and other related policy frameworks. Specialized support and access to appropriate modes of communication. Access to further education and training, and access to adult education and training. as it's recently known. On the next slide is actually looking at one of the strategies that the department is implementing. That is the strategy on screening, identification, assessment, and support. Actually, this is a tool that the department has developed to enable itself, in particular educators in the classroom, to identify those learners with barriers to learning, as well as working out what support would be appropriate and responsive to their learning needs and learning style. So teachers and district officials trained on the tool in 30 districts in 2008. This is a tool that was approved as a working document so that as the training was done in 30 districts, the purpose was to ensure that at the same time it is consulted and therefore strengthened for a further rollout. The strategy links with others such as curriculum differentiation and adaptation. That is teaching at multi-levels in the classroom for educators. In 2009, a further 40,000 documents were distributed to provinces for further training of teachers and district officials, because provinces have taken upon themselves to take the capacity building on the tool further beyond the 30 districts that as a department we've been operating in from 2004 through to the end of 2009. It facilitates admission of only disabled learners with high needs and profound disabilities to special schools and learners with moderate needs to mainstream schools. That's what the tool is assisting us to do as a department. On issues of environmental access, this is about making schools environmentally accessible to the disabled learners, so that those that can afford to attend schools in their local environments can do so. 30 ordinary schools were earmarked for conversion to full service or inclusive schools, and 10 have already been converted. This is doing physical upgrading of the schools, making them accessible. So the 10 schools are actually in each of the 9 provinces. There is at least a school which is then going to serve as a model of what an inclusive school should be. Provinces are using funding from Treasury to convert the remaining 20 schools during the 2009 MTEF. Principles of universal designs are applied in the development of specifications for environmental accessibility and national infrastructure norms. The department has already developed specifications for environmental accessibility, and has those specifications have been distributed and given to physical resource planners in provinces so that they can use them as they build new classrooms or new schools. The above universal designs principles guide incremental upgrading of existing schools while ensuring that new schools comply with the specification. The department has also developed guidelines for full service or inclusive schools and is in the process of printing 40,000 copies that will be distributed across the provinces. Those are guidelines that will tell schools, especially mainstream schools, what criteria they should meet for them to be earmarked for inclusion, because it cannot be a haphazard process to include learners with barriers to learning in mainstream schools. It's got to be a guided process. Provision of assistive devices, 12 million rand tender
on materials and assistive devices was awarded in 2008. And I must indicate that those assistive devices have been procured, and the procurement process is actually nearing completion. That includes distribution and training. NIST analysis was conducted in 2008 in 32 special schools and full-service schools. That was going to inform the type of devices that are required by individual learners with barriers to learning and those that are disabled. Provision was made to supply 7 special schools and 3 full-service schools for learners with communication, mobility, and visual impairments. Provincial education departments were invited to participate in the tender so that we could cut down on the cost for each province going on its own tender. So provinces like KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, and the Western Cape have submitted their request to participate in the tender, and those requests have been approved. The training of users of devices is nearing completion in the 10 schools that we wanted to start with. Availability of appropriate learning and teaching support material. The department is developing a strategy for the provision of quality education for visually impaired learners. Audit of services has been completed in all schools for visually impaired learners, which is the initial step towards developing a strategy to improve the quality of teaching and learning of learners with visual impairment. 25 schools received 10 Braille storybooks each for foundation phase through Ituba Books Project, and that the distribution happened in 2009, around March. In 2006, the department bought books for visually impaired learners in grade 10, which was a special intervention by the department to ensuring that learners who were starting on the national curriculum statement were provided with learning material. And then on teacher training, a part of provincial budgets for the expansion of inclusive education is utilized to train teachers and district officials in different implementation areas. For instance, the screening, identification, assessment, and support strategy, the inclusive learning programs, and utilization of assistive devices. Because as a department, we feel that it is not enough to provide schools or learners with assistive devices, but educators need to be trained on how to use or help learners to use those assistive devices so that they can benefit maximally. And this is going on in the 30 selected districts. In 2007 and 2008, educators from respective special and full-service schools were trained in specialized skills such as visual impairment and deaf education. The department, in partnership with the Center for Public Service Innovation, in the Department of Public Service and Administration, and the South African Council for the Blind, is building capacity for visually impaired educators on innovative technology, including the Victor Reader. This is to help visually impaired educators to be able to teach, to provide support through technology. Developmental needs incorporated in continued professional teacher development program. In the department, there are discussions across the units or programs. In particular, the program that looks at continued professional teacher development to ensure that skills that are required to teach learners with disabilities are actually imparted to educators so that they are able to mediate the limitations that may be that may result from barriers to learning. Availability of specialist support service staff. Provinces such as the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Northwest, and Western Cape have created and are filling much-needed posts for therapists and learning support facilitators. The main thrust has been the creation of itinerant posts where incumbents reach out to different schools within districts to build capacity and also provide support to school-based support teams. The supplying of assistive devices has alerted the system in particular provinces on acute shortages of therapists, because therapists are critical in ensuring, in doing the assessment of learners with disabilities and also recommending what assistive devices could mediate the challenges that they face. Guidelines for inclusive learning programs. These are guidelines for curriculum differentiation and curriculum adaptation. For instance, one can make an example of if one talks about learners who are visually impaired or a learner who is blind. Those learners who are blind in particular learn through Braille, and that is doing an adaptation on the teaching and learning content to make sure that those learners also learn. That's what inclusive learning programs are about. Provinces such as, more than 3,000 teachers have been trained on curriculum differentiation since 2006. Provinces such as KZN and Western Cape have trained special schools on the national curriculum statement. The supply of assistive devices promotes access to curriculum, and it also enhances the guidelines, teaching at multi-levels. Curriculum for the South African, on the South African Sign Language, teachers from schools for the deaf were trained in deaf education in 2008 and 2008, and in 2007 and 2008. The department is in the process of finalizing the general education and training, as well as further education and training South African Sign Language curriculum, which was initiated by the Free State Province. On advocacy, two sets of DVDs have been developed to raise awareness on the UN Convention, as well as the importance of inclusive systems that ensures promotion of rights of access to education for disabled learners. The Department of Basic Education and Social Development has partnered in the development of a strategy for the integration of support services for children with disabilities. In 2008, an inclusive education learning space was launched as part of the department's Tutong portal, which provides an interactive dialogue among stakeholders, in particular with regard to special needs education and inclusive education. The department established a stakeholder forum to influence policy decisions and implementation of the policy on inclusion. Strengthening of special schools. I would start by saying that it should be understood that the department sees the role of special schools as critical in developing an inclusive system. So therefore, the department is putting effort in strengthening special schools and upgrading them so that they are elevated to a more functional level. So since 2006, provincial education departments invest in the upgrading of conditions in under-resourced special schools in response to the audit report on special schools, which was conducted in 2002. I need to add one more bullet, which maybe couldn't be saved on my presentation, and that is that the conversion of 30 special schools to resource centers is nearing completion, because this is an undertaking by the department which started in 2004 through to the end of 2009 during the field test of Education White Paper 6. Thank you. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Simelane. Thank you for that comprehensive input. The document is with every member, honorable members. We can now enter into comments, clarification, as well as questions. Yes, Dr. Zimande.
I wish
you were a doctor.
Thank you, Chair.
Oh, yeah.
This thing is a bit powerful.
Right.
Yeah. No, Chairperson, you see, I come from the system that they present today, the special schools. And taking from his last point about investing in the upgrade of the so-called impoverished special schools. I'm not too sure, Chair. The parity, if we could, in fact, let me ask this way. Can I thank them for this presentation, which is more of a, it sounded like a study group, not a study group, work study presentation, Chair. Because for me, the situation on the ground is far different to what is presented here today, theoretically. So it sounds like a work study paper. Chair, in your province, there's a school, Rekameling, in Halishiwe, and they linked it with the former white school, Elizabeth Conrad.
Yes,
you can see to yourselves if you see these things. If Rekameling, as a previously black school, is upgraded to the level. Mekagana, you come from Eastern Cape, there's Ifata. That has been there. Kanyisa, there's been problems with schools in the PE area, because these schools, Chair, in which leads to the question, there's this issue of who owns these special schools. I don't know if that matter is resolved, because very few of them. I studied, Chair, at the mouth of the NGA Kerk that you didn't like. Otherwise, I would not have had education, because the state didn't provide me with education. And the only state high school that was built, I think it was built late or mid-80s, which is the Philadelphia school. And if you look at Philadelphia school, I'm not sure, I haven't been there recently. But if you compare that Philadelphia school in Soshanguve and Prince of School in Pretoria, talking those schools in Pretoria, I'm not sure if this advancement of an improvement of schools is indeed taking place. Here in the Western Cape, Belleville, there is a school which was catering for colors and blacks. And the one in Worcester, Pioneer, which caters for whites, which was catering for white, visually impaired people. So I'm saying, the parities, for me, I don't think they've really attempted to deal with the parities. Now, there's also the lack of policy clarity, Chair, in relation. I hear that they are turning 30 schools into a resource school. But I think we need a list, Chair, so that we are able to play an oversight role on this, on that. The list of these schools, where they are, and so that we can track progress, because I think it leaves a lot to be desired. The sign language part, chairperson talks to the, some work on sign language. You see, Chair, I'm not sure whether they must indicate to us, because they talk advocacy somewhere, whether there is now a consensus in relation to the sign language for the deaf, to say, because the, as I speak now, those deaf schools that are that are in the so-called black areas, if they such, I'm not too sure, Chair. I think they still use, for instance, a school in Inkandla, and I hope IFATA as well is now using sign language. But a school in Inkandla, in an appalling condition, there's not even running water, you know, I don't know whether they use sign language. The one in Richmond, and there are many others, Chair, around the country. I'm not sure whether they are now using this sign language, the South African sign language. There was even a school in next between Wamash, which was catering for Indians, for the deaf, which is using its own American signs. So I'm saying, has now a consensus found, and is now a departmental directive that all of these schools use sign language, South African sign language. And hopefully that sign language, because it comes from the other quarter, it comes from so-called the white people's side, it does take cognizance of our own cultures. Because you see, when you sign, you sign language. I don't see Chair, but I speak sign language, and you could hear. the sign language, Chair, it does take the context, because it's a body language, you see. It does take context of your culture, if you, you know, your culture, so let me just summarize and leave it at that, your culture. So you don't just sign something that is in your culture might mean footage, if I may use that thing, you know, because it's going to be worked in such a way that it take cognizance of those. Now, without taking a lot of your time, just it's a subject, Chair, that I'm quite passionate, and I've been exposed, and I'm a product of that of that system. Now, Chair, the matter of which also the department must tell us is this issue of the resources they talk about. Because, Chair, there was a report or some work that they did in the past, which was looking at costing the running of a special school, because the committee should be able to take a clear decision to advise them in terms of running a special school. And the capacity of a special school. You see, there is a number of disabled children who can't get to schools because, he talks about DIAS, this system, they have assessment support, I'm calling it DIAS now. That system, the question would be, does it, it says, it separates those who are mildly disabled to mainstream and those that are severe to special schools. I'm not sure, because I am blind, where do I fall in that assessment? Do they check the mind, or do they, I don't know, psychiatric ability, or it checks what the kind of impairment that I have, so that then I qualify. And also, what kind of support then goes to those that are in the mainstream schools, and the resource schools, Chair. Let me stop here, Chair. I'll come back. I do have still more, but I'll come back. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Member Zimanda. You should actually be the one who is giving input. I hope the department is noting all your concerns. I'm going to take some more questions so that when we respond, when the department respond to a bulk of questions. Yes, Honorable Zukeswa.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Seems as if you should have called me long ago. So I see the response of the people. I was also going to ask the question of a moderate school. How does a moderate school looks like. And also, I'd love the presenter to please repeat for me the explanation on the slide of environmental access, the last bullet there. And also, you were talking about 30 schools that are being upgraded. Tell me, what about the new schools that you are building now? Are they also going to be accessible to those disabled children, or they are just the normal schools that we know? And how are the principles of universal design being applied there? And how many such schools have been completed? Let me stop there for now so that if other people can get in.
Thank you, Honorable Mam Kugan.
Thank you, Chairperson. On slide number 7, the last paragraph, you're talking about the tenders, slide 7, the provision of, you talk about the provincial education department invited to participate in the tenders. You mentioned only 3 provinces that participate in that. So I want to know what about the other provinces? Because I don't see any, like I'm just passing with the Eastern Cape, I don't see Eastern Cape here, so what's happened with the other provinces? Other question, Chairperson. The mainstream coming of gender issues and disability issues requires an audit of disability needs. Whose responsibility is it to ascertain the disability baseline figures? If it is the Department of Education, has this disability audit happened? If not, why not? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Ma'am Kugana. Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to ask this question, given that the Department of Public Service and Administration has failed to meet its employment equity targets in terms of disability. How has this informed the work of the Department of Education to increase the output of school graduates with disabilities to fill critical vacancies in the DPSA? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I'll stop there. I'll take in the following session 2 members there and 2 members here. And these 2, I'm inclined to separate them. You know, in school, when you have kids who are naughty, when you teach and they play, you take the other one and put them there behind the cross, and you take the other one and teach it. Yeah, I would appeal to you, members, just to behave, please. Thank you.
Respond from department, and then I'll come.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thanks to Honourable Members for questions. The first question was about sort of a disjuncture between the presentation and what is actually happening on the ground, as an observation from the Honourable Member. And that was related to the strengthening of special schools. I think it's a question that's based on that. It must be highlighted that the upgrading of special schools is a phase in process due to limited resources. And that is why the department actually started from the 30 nodal districts and prioritized those to do the upgrading of schools, in particular special schools in those areas. Again, this is happening against the background where we come from, as the Honourable Member has actually correctly highlighted, that there are many disparities that actually emanate from the past. So as a system, that is why we've decided to use a phased-in approach in upgrading the conditions and the functionality of special schools. And at the same time, started with 30 that were showing potential to become resource centers, so that those resource centers will extend their service to schools within their districts because of expertise in those schools that were selected and earmarked for conversion to resource centers. Then there was also a request which has been noted for this committee to be provided with a list of resource centers that will be provided, because we do have a list. On the question on the South African Sign Language, I think there are a few challenges in developing a curriculum, both of having the South African Sign Language as a medium of instruction, and secondly, as a subject. The challenge is that we also have the PEN South African Language Board, which also has a role to play in developing and coming up with standards, or minimum standards that the South African Sign Language should meet for it to be used. I want to believe that there is also still a challenge of getting the South African Sign Language being one of the 11 the official languages in the country. The question of the status. So in terms of developing it as a language of teaching and learning, as well as a subject, the department also depends on the provision of those standards, because they are going to provide guidance in terms of, you know, the development process of the South African Sign Language as a curriculum. But the department is in discussion with, or has been in discussion with, the provinces of all the Free States that started the development, the VETS, University of Witwatersrand, VETS, because there is expertise at the university, as well as, of course, with DESSA. So there are processes that have already started towards that development process. On the question about the running cost of a special school, well, that is a function that is not necessarily with the program, the inclusive education unit. It's a function in another branch, and which is carried out by a different directorate, the planning branch in the department. So one is unable to actually provide information or a proper response in there. Thanks, Honourable Member. The CS process, or DS, and the CS process, what does it assess? The CS process assesses a variety of factors, or a variety of sources of barriers to learning. There is a diagnostic component in the tool. That is the tool that can be used by health professionals. In particular, it looks at assessing disabilities, because from an education sector, as a teacher myself, I won't be able to apply the tool to establish the extent of disability and what it entails and what implications are, and therefore what intervention is required. Which is why in developing the tool, the CS tool, the department has worked and continues to engage the Department of Health and, of course, Social Development in refining the tool. As I said, the training happened last year on the tool, but because the training happened in 30 districts out of the 81 districts of the department, it was for the purpose of strengthening the tool and ensuring that the department will get input from all stakeholders in the process. And that also includes disability organizations, as the department has actually established a stakeholder forum. I may ask the honourable member who asked the question about a moderate school, maybe to please repeat the question for me. I didn't quite get it. I'm not sure if I may, through you, Chair, if I may ask.
We are two people who asked about moderate schools. Mr. Honorable Zimande has also asked. I asked, can you give us an example, maybe, of a moderate school? How does a moderate school look like?
Thank you, Honorable Member. Maybe the concept moderate actually came about when the presentation was talking about the instrument, the CS instrument, in terms of doing assessment and therefore doing proper placement of learners so that they will be in an environment or a school where they can benefit maximally. And then in terms of the barriers to learning or limitations to learning, the CS actually as a tool distinguishes among different levels of need for support. There will be low levels of support needs. There will be learners who will fall in the category of low levels of support needs. There will be learners who will fall in the moderate level of support needs. And then there will be learners who will fall under a high level of support needs. High level of support needs, for instance, will entail learners with profound disabilities. One can make an example of, for instance, there are cerebral palsy learners. I think those would actually be classified under high needs, because there are a lot of resources that are required to support an individual who is cerebral palsy to learn. You need human resource, you need your wheelchairs, you need sitting postures to position the learner in the classroom. And some of those learners also have multiple disabilities, not only the physical disability that you can see. So those will be at high needs. But at moderate needs, one can look at, for instance, those support needs that do not require high-level and sophisticated intervention. So those are learners that can also benefit by attending mainstream schools. Yeah, I think that's where the link is. And then on new schools being built again, that I think I did mention in the presentation that physical resource planners were provided with the specifications for environmental accessibility of the school environment. So they are the implementers of that. So one, again, maybe could look at this as a question that will be responded to in writing. Participation in the tender, well, all provinces were invited to participate in the tender because the tender is meant to run for 2 years. So, and the assistive devices, it must be said, are actually very costly. Most of them are imported from overseas, and due to the exchange rate and everything that happens, the budget that was set aside from the department would not even cover or provide the 30 special schools and the 4 full-service schools that were assessed. So what was there could only cover 10 schools, 7 special schools and 3 full-service schools. That is why then the department decided to invite provincial departments to participate in the tender, so that they can use their budget to augment on the provision of assistive devices in schools and take the project further or the intervention further. Well, as I said so far, it's only 3 provinces that have submitted their request and were granted. I'm hoping that other provinces will be moving in that direction maybe promptly. And then the audit of disabilities in mainstream schools, so far we collect that information, or that information is provided through a special survey, an annual school survey for special schools. No, it's not that one, sorry. I beg your pardon. The audit of disabilities in mainstream schools is that information is collected through the annual school survey that is distributed every year to all mainstream schools in the country. So there are tables or questions that ask about the statistics of learners at different categories of disabilities in the schools. And that information is then escalated to the department for us to look at the scale of the intervention and the scale of access of learners with disabilities to mainstream education.
Okay.
Sorry for interrupting. You know, I've got a problem when it comes to the taking of the audit, because I've been a teacher for the past years and I've been doing that job of taking the audit of in my school of how many children have disabilities and how many ones special, those that are of special needs. I've been doing it for about 5 years, you see, and there's nothing that is happening. I mean, you say now you are phasing it in. It's been phased in since 2004, and it's still phasing in still now. It means that they will be phasing it in to 2014 again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Member, for the question. I must say that this has been a development process, actually, because there is the problem of definition of disabilities, which, you know, it's not accessible to the general public. I mean, it's not everybody who can understand those definitions. So the department has, over the years, tried to simplify the tool, the annual school survey, And I must say that this year there was also even a move to actually cut down on the data that's collected around special needs education from mainstream schools. So this is improving the technical side of data collection and the quality of data, etc., that the system should have. We may not have made maybe much progress, but I do believe that, you know, the situation has been improving over the years. I'm going to ask maybe my DDG present, maybe to, as one of the questions that she will be addressing, maybe to address the question related to DPSA and the quotas and the obligations. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Melanie. We continue with our questions. Sorry. I didn't see over to you, DDG.
It's very pleasant to know that sometimes I get missed. Chair, I think that this one requires a more comprehensive response, but certainly in terms of our understanding of employment equity targets, the DPSA and the role that the Education Department would be playing in the further development of the human resource development strategy, there would be a serious look at what the obligations are in terms of meeting those targets. As we know, each government department, like all entities out there, are required in terms of their percentage staff allocation to adequately meet those targets. At our last report, if I understood the question correctly, at our last report of the Education Department, we were informed that we were on target in terms of our own internal official staff in terms of our targets for employment of people with disabilities. Whether that translates adequately to the strategy itself remains to be seen.
Didi, without interrupting you, I would like, I can see you want to sum up, but I would prefer that you allow the second round of questions, and at the end then you sum up the whole report in details that you want to fit in. Yeah, please.
Responding to the addition that my colleague was asking me to make, but I will do that in the summary.
All right.
Chairperson, mine is on the issue of the special school. I heard that there is a request for a list, but I want to go further and say that the special school should be decentralized, because this, the present norm is that rural people are not benefiting out of this. People must travel from far distances, from their families, but it deals with the issue of decentralization of these institutions. And the second question, Chairperson, is that I know that this department is relatively new. We would like to see a breakdown. How many money are we spending on the different school versus a normal school? Hence, some of these people are handicapped and need more than ordinary budget to fulfill the needs. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I've got a few questions on the training of the educators or the teachers, especially in this content. I want to know if there's a specific place, an institution where these teachers are being trained for this task. And I was also in school. I was also a headmaster of a school, so I know what's going on. And especially, we were forced a few years ago to let all the people with disabilities into our schools. And now I must hear you're busy building 60 or what new schools for disability people. So we must change everything in school for wheelchairs and all that kind of thing. And, well, for me it's good. That's good news. To have these people in education area where we can help them with their specific needs. I want to know the staff. We've got the educators, the teachers, and then we've got a staff. Do they also get special training to help these people in the schools? Because the teachers can't help them and train them. So we must have staff to do other duties as well in the school setup. And then, how long is the training of the teachers? Is it a 2-year training course, or is it a 3-year or 4-year training course that the teachers have to get them ready for these disability people? And then, the people, are they going to host in hostels, or are they staying at home with their parents? What is the situation there? In this, especially this new schools you've been talking about. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Who of the two? God.
Thank you, sir. Seriously, I wouldn't love to ask too many questions, but I want to make a comment that honestly I'm very, very worried, because what I'm hearing here is totally different with what is happening in South Africa, unless the department are talking about another area. For an example, I'm hearing the department say they want to test 30 schools, if I'm listening properly, unless I'm getting confused as you carry on, because I can't link what you are saying with what I understand what is going on the streets and in the areas where we're coming from. You want to turn these schools into resource centers. What are these schools? Are they special schools that you want to turn them into resource centers? And if that is the case, what informs you? Because even now we are still questioning, where are the disabled people in workplaces? The output, what made you to think that you can turn them into resource centers, or what is a resource center for that matter, if I've got you correctly? But then I want to go back to Dr. Zimanda said. The truth is that I think the department needs to sit down, plan properly what they want to do, and how they are going to assist disabled people. Because these questions, all of them, when they are being asked, one thing that clicks, it's a school that I know. In many, many of these areas that I've learned about. For instance, there's a school in Grahamstown, Kuyaswa, the disabled school, the people with special needs. No single teacher there was trained to be a teacher to teach disabled people. This is what I know. And some of them are just as people with standard 10 metric, but their teachers are locally. You can go to that school in Grahamstown tomorrow, get that information, and the department in the Eastern Cape can give you that answer. In Port Elizabeth, throughout, the people that are there to assist disabled teachers, I mean teachers to disabled children, are not trained in this. Now, I'm just going to clamp on that question. These 30 that we are talking about, or 40, I didn't even notice, but I heard you. You talked about these people who have been trained, these teachers. Where has this happened? Where are they? Who are their names? You're supposed to have the list. Why don't you make that information available to us, so that when we are coming back to you for a feedback, and we will say to you, the people that we have trained, they have not been trained, but they need another training, or they were untrainable because they cannot impart the skills that we've given them to their communities. The truth is with the department, or in fact, most of the administrators in South Africa, most of them are doctors, professors, because every day you are equipping yourself with the information so that when you come here, you are able to map us such that our monitoring and evaluation that we're supposed to be doing we are unable to do it because you've got too much information to give us that is not related to the practical reality of the South African. I mean, that is my conclusion. It is based on this document that you've given us. This document, it's like to me, as I'm saying it, the manifesto of these political parties, if you go back to our manifestos of last year, you'll see they are all like this document. They're all like this document. It's not elaborated. You can't even understand. Because what we want from you is the how part. How are you screening and identifying and supporting disabled people in school? This is what we want. How much is there to do that? Where are you doing that? How many are these children that we are talking about? This is what we want to know so that we can see the impact. But that is scanty information because these other things, I mean, I can't understand what is this. I think the best person that was making the presentation here was I was listening. It was at least the man was better than the department. It should have been someone from the department because he came with specific at directing us to where the need is. But you guys, so unfortunate that the department puts us in this pattern to give us this kind of information with no clear direction. Where are these people? Where they've been trained? Where are they? What are they doing? Haven't they changed to be teachers and they are members of parliament now? So these are the questions, because I'm trying to be honest. These are the questions because you don't know what you are doing. It's wrong to say you don't know what you are doing. You don't follow what you are doing. You don't monitor what you have done so that you assess the impact. Now, for me, Honorable Chairperson, to be here asking all these questions that I would be asking here, I know it will be a waste of time because the department will have all the answers. They've answered about moderate schools. I can't even now link this moderate school with what I'm seeing there next to where I stay in this street and in this school. I'll be happy if we can say to the department, if we can have this information written down, more elaborated so that we can follow it properly with specifics. Where are these people that we have trained? Where have they been working? In which school? What are they doing now? How are they assisting? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Member Bloom.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, you know what I hear from the members, and I fully agree. It is oversight. Practical. Go there. You see, the last question, and most of the members have said, you see, this document is very good, but we must follow it up. We must go there to see if those things are there that the department is presenting to us. That is what I catch. But Chairperson, you know, follow up on Honorable Broad, Professor, because that's a doctor now, Dr. Zimande, the title of Professor Broad. You know, Ranto, sorry, my sister, sorry very much. You know, the professor there, she is saying, for the past 5 years, she was doing this type of job. Now the department is coming today to tell us it's work in progress. Mm-hmm. Up until when? Are they going to, next week or next year, they are going to tell us again that no, we are still developing a tool that, like they are saying now. But you were busy, Chairperson, all these years with this thing. When are they going to say, here is the product coming up? That was a follow up. But Chairperson, you know, in Kroonstad, I'm from Kroonstad. There are people there. They approached me, I think last month, a group of parents. They are having children there. There's no facility there in Kroonstad. They are taking the children, transporting the children to Welkom. But these parents must pay for themselves, transport and everything. Now, I want to hear from the department, who is the correct person that I must approach for assistance for these people, because these people came to me as their representative in Parliament. So I will be very happy, Chairperson, if I can get the necessary contact details of a person who can assist.
Thank you,
Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member Bloom. Back to department. You can answer questions.
Chair, just for information, was this the last round of questions? Because I don't know at which point I should sum up.
According to me, this is the last round of questions. Respond, and then after you can summarize.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Starting from... I think one was a comment about the decentralization of special schools. I think that's something that the department will have to look at. I can't say what will happen. The budget for special schools, I think that was the question. How much are they receiving, therefore, to provide education for the learners? Provinces, I do know that they have the budget. You know, they have that information because they do the transactions to special schools, so they should be able to provide the information. The training of teachers that we referred to was the training on specialized skills, for instance, teaching learners with visual impairment and deaf education as well, which took place in 2007 and 2008. We have, as a department, we have the list of teachers that were trained. So if the committee wants the information to be presented, we will do so. The conversion of special schools into resource centers, maybe one needs to give clarity in terms of what we mean by that as a department. This is simply to resource a selected number of special schools, give them additional resources in terms of materials, in terms of human resource, so that those schools are able, they will still continue teaching learners that they have admitted that they have in their role. But because of the additional resources that the department plans to give to those special schools, then they will be expected to spread the service and support to other schools who have learners with disabilities. Because special schools, some special schools, not many, do have psychologists, therapists, etc. So those are the kinds of services that we are looking to expanding to other learners so that learners in other schools can also benefit. I can make an example. I was at Agape School here in the Western Cape. I've been there recently. It's a special school. It's one of our resource centers. That school has been given assistive devices to teach learners. We talk about technology and other devices. And they have been given by the province, if I remember well, a therapist and a psychologist as a school. That's adding to the resources that they have, because It's expected to provide support to a mainstream school, which is Cascade Primary, because the capacity is not there in dealing with learners with disabilities. Just as an example as to what we mean by selecting special schools and upgrading their functionality by giving them additional resources. I was also at Powell School here in the Western Cape. That school has got lots of resources which it has acquired through its own efforts as well, doing fundraising to buy equipment. And it is assisting most schools in the province, even parents, to assess through the use of their therapies children with disabilities, and therefore recommend where those children can be best served. And that is a resource center, as an example. But one should also understand that in South Africa, I think broadly, I think members, honorable members, are going to agree that we have got limited skilled human resource, broadly speaking, in whatever sector you could be looking at. So this is not an isolated problem, for the department. It's a shortage of skilled resources broadly in the country. Well, how the assessment actually impacts on the learning of disabled learners, I think the honorable member said the committee would prefer to actually do a follow-up. I think that was just a comment which is most welcome, because after we've provided the committee with a list of schools where we've been doing this work, then I hope the committee will do what it is responsible for to follow up and monitor and provide oversight, which one hopes that would also help to guide the department as well in terms of how best we can serve learners with disabilities. I'm sure we will really welcome that as a department, so that we don't do what we think works. We also receive inputs from all quarters. I must just mention one thing that about the progress, the slow progress and the phasing in of the development of inclusive education. Yes, it is true. It's been targeting 30 special schools and 30 mainstream schools up to the end of this year, 2009, because there are a few strategies which are outlined by White Paper 6, which the department made sure that those strategies were well prepared and strengthened and were ready for a further rollout, because we can't be careless and throw a new intervention across the board. We have to make sure that it's tested and it can stand the test of time. That has been the case. And again, the retarded progress that we are talking about also results from the fact that as an inclusive education, or as a department broadly, a department of education, we can't alone build an inclusive system or an inclusive society for that matter. It needs all role players. For instance, there was a question around transport, that the Department of Transport should come to the fore and play its role. We can't, a department is unable to play all the roles that are required to build an inclusive society and an inclusive education. Department of Health, Social Development have a role to play. One can go on. The list goes on. So actually, I'm raising this because when it comes to the physical upgrading of the selected mainstream schools, making them environmentally accessible, we have, the department is working in partnership with the Department of Public Works, for instance, because that's the department that's responsible for building classrooms and building schools. So the department cannot do it alone, and the department is unable to control how the other department functions. But projects are submitted, of course, by the provinces to the implementing agents. So that those will cause some delays to a certain extent. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Simelane. Thank you for your responses. I will then give over to the DDG to sum up and make more meat of what has been given to us. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Maybe before I give over to the DDG to summarize and close the discussion, I just wanted to indicate and make a comment from the level of discussions and interaction that we had as a department from members, honorable members, and say the questions that you have asked us, especially from where I'm seated as the person that is responsible for strategy, its implementation, and also reporting within the department, it really reinforces my unit in terms of interrogating the reports that we get from the various program managers, especially around the question of impact. What impact are we actually making as a department? Your voices are clearly heard, and they are actually saying to us, we need to sharpen the way we do business, so that the society that we purport to be serving can really get a value for money. I also want to indicate the fact that it really shows that we are all South Africans. We really understand the problems, the challenges that are actually facing South Africa with regard to its past legacy, and also the direction that we want to take as a department. I want to assure honorable members that the things that have been said by Dr. Simelane, they are activities and projects which are within our strategic plan, which are derived from the MTSF, and then those strategic plans are also supported by business plans or annual operational plans, wherein you are also strengthening my position in a way of demanding the exact or specifics in terms of where they are going or where they want to go, and actually in terms of the dent that their programs will be making onto the legacies that we have, so that we can move. I know it's too little, very late, but at least there is a start, and this start must be seen to be something that's going to change the lives of South Africans in general. So I just wanted to make this comment and say the activities that he has indicated, or all the things that he has indicated in this presentation, it was not a purely academic exercise or maybe a paper to come and say this is what we can present to you, but they are written in our strategic plans, which are public documents. We have circulated them to parliamentarians, and then at the end of this financial year, we are still going to provide you with an annual report wherein we'll be saying, in terms of what was presented to today, whether we have actually turned the 30 special schools into resource centers, and what is the impact after turning them into that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think it's been a very, very exacting session for us. We will certainly, as I said at the outset, convey all of the sentiments expressed here to our team back in at the department. But I also think I need to, just in summary, respond to a few of the outstanding matters. And I will also rely upon the Secretariat to assist in identifying which of those items you require information on, and the detail and the time frame for doing so. So we will certainly liaise from our office with the Secretariat, just so that we are sure that we've covered all of the concerns and the needs expressed in today's meeting. I think in closure, Chair, it's very important that we take stock of the sentiments expressed here. The first being one based on the issues of the perception of what it is that the department is doing. I think my colleague who has just spoken has indicated that this is not something that we purely brought together in a presentation because your invitation prompted us to do so. It is embedded in the strategic plan and operational plans of the department. We are constantly and daily reminded by our colleagues with disabilities about the extent and the pace of delivery of the department. So not only do we service the schools out there, I want to assure the honourable members that internal to the department, our staff are as keen to see us deliver on this. So we are constantly engaging in those debates as well. But in delivering on the expectations in terms of our strategic planning, we also have to take stock of the work done by the various branches that must report and support the work of the Inclusive Education Directorate. And here I want to speak specifically of the statistics that we will be giving to you, which you will get from our Systems and Planning branch. They have also been responsible, together with the adoption of their recommendations at HEDCOM and at the CEM level, where the MECs of provinces and the heads of departments of provinces are represented, where they've adopted the national guidelines and norms and standards for infrastructure. So we talk about the design guide. They actually list in very, very clear detail what provincial education departments are expected to deliver on in terms of the norms and standards for the environmental access for learners and teachers in these schools. So I was showing my colleague while we were speaking that in terms of that, we have that the fact, a recorded fact, that all the existing schools are to be incrementally converted as budgets allow for it. Secondly, that all new schools that are being built must comply with these norms and standards. So if there's a failure at provincial level to deliver on these very norms that they've adopted, then I would invite the Select Committee and to actually visit those sites. And there's actually an open invitation to the Select Committee to identify possible opportunities for us to take you to those sites where, in fact, there has been work that's been done to begin to develop this program of delivery. And we will convey that message to the branch responsible for this area so that you can be taken to those sites as your program allows for that to be done. The next point I need to make is around the issue around teacher training. And our recent teacher development summit, which involved all of the provinces, all of the national officials who are responsible for continuing professional development of teachers, as well as the higher education institutions, were represented at a summit held in July. And inclusive education was a key point in a commission that was working around this particular program. So I want to say that the report of that teacher development summit can also be made available as a resource document for the Select Committee, as well as the norms and standards document I referred to earlier. If the Secretary can just assist me as I'm speaking to capture that point so we get you a copy of the norms and standards, but that you also then, in terms of the branch responsible for teacher development, get a response as to where those institutions are that have devoted their special attention to developing teacher skills in special needs, so that we provide you with that detail. Our expectation is that higher education institutions, including the debate around whether we have a form of teacher training that is focused solely on special needs, that be tied in with the National Teacher Development Strategy. The outcome of that teacher development summit was that by next year we need to have a national teacher development plan in place, and that will be fully consulted with all of those stakeholders that I've identified. There was a key point around the issue of teacher assistance. I think it came from the honourable member opposite me, who wanted to know whether there is provision made for assistance to teachers in those institutions. Coupled with the expanded public works program is a proposal from within the department to take their further development of teacher assistance. Now, we've got a very focused program to look at providing bursaries for teachers And the encouragement is that in the very branch responsible for inclusive education, that we encourage teachers to take up, young students, to take up courses of study that will assist in the provision of skills required in the sector. But the EPWP will be focusing on the teacher assistance required. And this is, again, something which is budget-dependent and interdepartmental in its approach. So through that EPWP, which is currently being governed by DPW, we would like to see that the allocation made to education to be taken up to develop more teacher assistance, especially at primary level. So we hope that we can report positively on that at some later stage. In the Karigude program, I need to refer to that, which is also part of the basic education department, is a focused inclusion of both volunteers and teachers with disability, catering for learners with disability. So in the Karigude, which is the math literacy program of the state, we have a focused area of delivery, and we will provide the actual statistics for that, because the teachers who are offering that particular part of the program, material, course material has been developed in Braille, and as well as audio, so that we can begin to use the work and the learning support material, both for adult learners with basic literacy and numeracy as well. So that's another area that I'd like to comment on, and it's not just massaging or providing you with the honey, but it's actually to provide you with the facts on the ground, and we would invite you to those sites as well. Our progress, Chair, is not at the speed that we would like to declare positively for all of us to celebrate, but we do so with absolute pride that this department has made it its business to ensure that access, as I said in my introductory comments, is coupled with inclusiveness, and that we need to ensure that when we develop the policy guidelines and the directives at a national level, we must consistently remind ourselves that schools are managed by provinces and not by the national department. And for that reason, those provincial budgets, those annual surveys that the Honourable Member referred to that she was collecting over the years, all of that information is what feeds into national policy review and oversight functions of the national department. And for that reason, we need to ensure that school management buys into the department's national campaign for quality learning and teaching, which is currently the department's flagship campaign to begin to improve on quality delivery in schools. So it's at that level that monitoring should also take place, and we're encouraging our communities to do just that, so that we can ensure that when we have to look at continuing professional development for teachers or pre-service qualifications of teachers and the actual delivery in the classroom, that all of that complies with the standards that we are setting for ourselves. But also through the issues and the questions that we were not as a team here able to answer today, we will certainly undertake to come back to you with the information that is required for you to build a broader understanding of what the department is in fact doing. But I would also invite you that through the provincial process, we invite our provinces to report on progress, because it is at that level that budgets are allocated, and we often have to weigh up whether the school in the areas that we've mentioned here today, for instance, whether they are getting what has been allocated to them. Because at the national level, we can only work in concert with our provincial colleagues to ensure that inclusive education is indeed accessible to all. So I want to thank you for the opportunity, Honourable Members, to make our report. As rushed maybe as our preparation time was, we've done so based on the actual facts at hand, and we would never let our specialisation or our expertise be used to cloud the detail or the facts on the ground. We would like to encourage that we will go back to those sites and invite you to come along with us so that we can all measure the progress that we are making. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, JDG. Thank you very much for your comprehensive addition of what Dr. Smelane has been saying. And the gentleman there, I'm very sorry, I can't remember his name. His comments were very honest, were very close to the point. I see him to be an elderly man.
You know, I'm an elderly man myself too, and I always ask myself, if I cannot be truthful at my age, when will I ever be truthful? So you gave me that impression that you are a man who has gone through a long history of life, and we appreciate your appreciation of this committee, and I'm sure you will go out here knowing that we are not devouring people. We are actually trying to get the right thing that we'd like to get from, you know, departments, because our responsibility is that we must see to it that departments are delivering. Our going out of here, going on what is called provincial week, we actually go there to inspect what has been delivered, whether it is of quality, whether it does benefit the community, and so forth and so forth. So that when we release money here to various departments, then we know we are releasing this money to a department that has got the capability. I will release the department. Thank you ever so much. I don't know whether you're going to Pretoria. If you're going to Pretoria, fly safely, arrive alive, and we will stay here. Next year, you will be coming here again to come and give us a brief on the 30 selected schools. Thank you very much. On behalf of this committee, we say thank you very much.
I'm still very young, that's why we are not talking too much.
Yeah, members, I think we can spend another 5 minutes. We've only got considerably speaking, only 2 items, and we can handle that very quick. That is the consideration of the committee program, and then the other will be meeting with the Nigerian delegation. That's just a decision that we have to take.
Where is the program?
Or we can leave the program for the chairperson to decide on it.
Yes.
As far as the consideration of the program is concerned, I will give it to whoever has been delegated to come and explain it to us, because I cannot explain it. But I hear that the chairperson has already adopted the program. Maybe for us to do, we may not even need to go through the whole program. What we can do is just to confirm the adoption of the program on the basis of a committee now. Are we together? Yeah. Can we say we adopt the program? Secretary, you just capture that point. All right. Adopt it. Second?
Seven.
Fourth? Fifth? Right? Yeah. So we adopt the program, Secretary. And then the last point will be meeting with the Nigerian. I would just like the Secretary just to empower the committee, so that when we, the Secretary will just empower the committee. Zuki, sir? Can you listen, please?
Honorable members, we received an invitation from the International Relations Department from Parliament, and Parliament has taken a decision to be involved in activities marking the 10th year anniversary celebration by South Africa and Nigeria Binational Commission during the month of October. So the department has requested that the select committee, this committee together with the portfolio committee, can do a joint meeting with the counterparts. Like they want, the Nigerian delegation wants to meet with this committee and the other committee and just Inter-Ed. They want to know the processes of Parliament. Three members will be fine for that. They don't want the whole committee. They want volunteers of three members to be part of that meeting. So can you get the volunteers? And that meeting will take place on the 28th of this month. That is the next week before we start with the public hearing. It's just an hour's meeting.
They were members.
On which day is it? The 28th of October.
Yeah,
what day is it? They say they want in 1 hour. It will depend to the members when they want to meet with them. But on that day, we've also got joint public hearings on the implementation of Domestic Violence Act. So, yeah, it's starting at 10. So the members, I propose that they choose the time from 8 to 10, between those times, 8 to 10.
Yes, just an hour before the hearing,
yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. Member, you had your hand up.
No, I'm available.
Are you?
I'm available.
You're available, right? For the meeting of the,
yeah.
Of the Nigerian Bi-National Commission, right?
I think it's going to be relevant also to take the second
question. Of course.
Yeah. The second
question and the
third one.
No, I'm scared to meet. No. Maybe it was another delegation, but not for now. No. Take for Louis, Dr. Nzimande.
Only those who are not in programming committee.
Say between 9 and 10.
Can you have order, please?
Sorry, Chair. Sorry, Chair.
All things at the same time, but we cannot speak at the same time.
We have the honorable member that side. Who is the second one? Mam Tigan. Ram Kukari, right? And then the chairperson. I think that would be sufficient. Yeah. Right. We have agreed, and then we are not going to take AOB. Rather, we will propose anyone who wants closure to propose closure, or if you want us to go on, then.
I propose we go on.
Order. Here is a question from the secretariat of this committee.
Yes.
They want to know whether members are well equipped with the coming hearing, or if not well equipped, can you allow someone just to give you a short brief about the hearing now?
Thank you, Chair. So that's the first person we're going to another meeting. I don't know whether it will be appropriate, but if that one can be very fast to brief us with this, because we're going to another meeting now.
I'm very much aware, honorable member. But this was a concern of the secretariat. I couldn't just decide on. Speak quickly.
Chairperson, a proposal. Let them prepare a document and circulate that document to the members, and then it will be more empowering to have a document with the context.
Suggestion? Do you agree?
Yes.
Right. Agreed. And then do we continue or do we close the meeting? Who's proposing?
I propose.
You're proposing and you are seconding. Right. Honorable members, thank you very much for having this patience. Blue, can you sit down? Yeah, it cannot be a loose cannon here. thank you very much, members, for having so much patience and for having made so much contribution, asking relevant questions, and as
you have heard the department, they are very pleased about the type of questions you have asked. They say it actually sharpens their mind. It actually even motivates them. What is it expected from them? So thank you very much. The chairperson will hear from the secretariat that we successfully set in a committee and it was successfully chaired, and she must take us out for a nice supper. Thank you very much.
Very
nice. Meeting closed.
Very successful chair.
Yeah.